Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, a podcast by the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand.
Each episode, we interview a top female executive from the public transport sector in Australia, New Zealand, and around the world.
If you're interested in leadership, workplace gender equality, or building clean, green transport for the future, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome to a new episode of Women Who Move Nations, the Public Transport Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Batsis. I'm the Executive Director of Future Mobility at the Department of Transport and Planning. I'm also a PTA ANZ Ambassador, and I am super excited today. I am interviewing Lauren Streifer. She is the new CEO of PTA ANZ. And Lauren, delighted to talk to you today.
I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. So as I've just said, you've just been appointed to the role of CEO of PTA ANZ, which is the Public Transport Association, Australia, New Zealand. I wanted to ask you a few questions about that, right? So what, you've just started, I think, in the last month. So I wanted to ask what attracted you to the role and how you're finding it so far?
Well, it's really interesting because when I was approached for the role, I was actually in a really good place. I was doing things that I really enjoyed. And it would have taken a role that really blew me away to even consider it, frankly. But when this role came up, I thought to myself, there's a huge opportunity in the region with public transport and with energy. And this role really is the cross-section of both. And it kind of does what I enjoy the most, which is a cross-section of government and industry, building partnerships, showing leadership in an area. And so I really couldn't say no when the opportunity came, despite how much fun I was already having.
I love that you kind of shared around how you were having fun and this actually was a role that you just couldn't turn down. So how are you finding it so far? Like, what are you focused on at the moment?
I think what's really interesting to me, and when I met with the board, when I first discussed the role, is you don't need to do any advocacy work because all of the big players are already at the table. So any of the issues that you want to address, whether it's livability of cities, whether it's zero emissions, we're at the forefront of this change. We are the players who can make the change. So it's really exciting to me to bring all of the key players together to discuss how we move the dial on some of these key issues. I'm also really excited that one of my first formal responsibilities is launching our conference in August, which will be held in Melbourne this year. And the really exciting thing about the conference for me is that we have a delegation from the US, from APTA, which is the American equivalent of PTA and Z. And we have a very senior delegation of American transport officials coming over from Los Angeles, from Dallas, from New York, from Washington, D.C., and we can discuss some of these challenges together. So obviously you can hear from my accent that I'm American. So it's a really incredible opportunity to mix my two worlds together and kind of explore what we're both doing really well.
Yeah, so cool. I'm really looking forward to the conference, actually, being in Melbourne and our department sponsoring that as well. So I wanted to ask you, you've kind of touched on some of the key issues, right, around public transport, livability, links to sustainability. What do you see in the next 5 years to be the big opportunities for public transport in Australia and New Zealand?
I think it's a really good question. I think the biggest opportunity is obviously we have a big Forward Works program in public transport, the biggest in Australian history. In every state, we're building really incredible transport projects, particularly public transport projects. And there's a real mandate to get on with it and build really incredible things. I think the most exciting thing for me from a policy perspective over the next 5 or 10 years is for us to really decide what kind of cities and regional areas we really want to build. You know, when we're looking at our city, do we want to be a city like New York? Do we want to be a city like London? Or do we want to be, you know, an even better version for ourselves? And I was in Milan recently and I went to see the Duomo. And it was originally built in the 1300s and it wasn't finished until the 1900s. And so if you think the people who were putting this together, there were generations that would not see it. They were all building towards this future vision that they wanted to create. And they knew that it was their grandchildren's children or later that would finally see a version of it. And so I think it's a really incredible opportunity for us to get together as a region and say, what sort of public transport system, what sort of community do we want to build for, you know, generations to come? And so that's why I'm really excited about our role in that.
That's actually a really cool way of reflecting on it, right? The legacy in terms of the decisions we're making around where investment goes and what that means for how our cities and regions are shaped. Yeah, I really like that. I kind of now want to delve actually a bit about you, your personal professional background and your career, because I mean, I'm pretty blown away, Lauren. Like, your CV is super interesting. You've got such a breadth of experience. And I kind of, I guess, wanted to start with perhaps you could share a bit of an overview about your journey and how do you think that the skills that you've gained and those experiences have kind of shaped you to end up being the CEO of PTA ANZ?
Yeah, I obviously have a very unique background, but I think most people, particularly women who have ended up in transport, they didn't graduate necessarily thinking that they were going to end up in transport. Most senior women that I speak to, it was kind of a happy accident. But when I graduated from uni, I took the diplomatic service exam, which is to be an American diplomat, and I passed it. But at the time, I had a partner who lived in Australia. I wanted a chance to have a career in Australia. And I was reminded from a few people in the diplomatic service that you're really constrained with what you can actually do because it's controlled very much from Washington, D.C. So they said, you have the opportunity to be a diplomat in the business world. So my first role out of uni was working for APEC, which is the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation Group, which is 21 countries on the Asia Pacific that come together to discuss regional trade issues. And so that includes the United States, Russia, China, Australia, and South America, Southeast Asia. And so they were getting together to discuss agriculture one day or transport the next day, or it was during the financial crisis. And so how are we going to face some of those challenges? So my first role was really discussing really big topics with really senior government officials from the region. And I think that really set the trajectory of my career, which was bringing the top people together to discuss some of the major issues. So I worked for APEC for several years. Then I went away and took a gap year and I returned and I saw an advertisement for a policy director role at Roads Australia, which was the peak body for roads. And I thought to myself, I hate roads. I don't even drive. I only use public transport and I don't really want to do this, but I'll apply for the job because it was in the beginning of December or the end of November. And I thought, you know, I might not get a job until February. You know, it was very practical. And I went into the interview with the CEO of Roads Australia, Ian Webb. And actually, the recruiter at the time told me not to bother applying for the job because she said I wasn't qualified. I didn't have enough experience in transport. The salary was too high for me. I mean, she gave me 1,000 reasons why I shouldn't. So it made me want to do it more, of course. And then I went in for the interview with Ian Webb. The interview went really well. Ian was actually a former diplomat himself, so we had a lot to talk about. And then I left that afternoon and I had 5 missed calls on my phone from Ian saying, not only did he want to hire me, but he wanted to give me a promotion from the interview and he wanted me to be basically his second in charge. So yeah, so all of a sudden I was catapulted into transport, but at the time I didn't realize the kind of remit that roads had, which is it's not just transport, it's building massive major projects, multi-billion dollar projects. You know, the tender process and bidding. And so I got into big build world, which I really loved. And I was there for 7 years. And then that started me in my world of transport before I joined PTA ANZ.
Such an awesome story. And I really love your reflection, right? I mean, God, you're just so perfectly fit for leading the Public Transport Association when you talk about the fact that you're a public transport user. I think, though, there's been a real shift, right, in recent years just around recognizing the integrated transport network and the importance of that and actually how so much of our public transport, for example, trams and buses, you know, rely on road space and the allocation of that's become so important. I wanted to ask you a bit more about your career stuff, right? So you left Roads Australia. And what's clear to me, right, you've got this very entrepreneurial spirit, which I just love. Like the first time I met you, I was just like, wow, I'm blown away. And, you know, I know in recent years, you started your own company called Skillsy, and that's a training company. And you're very focused on supporting the development of skills, particularly for younger people in the infrastructure sector. you know, and I've watched you from afar, you've gathered buy-in from very senior people across the public and private sector in Australia to support this initiative. And I'd love to hear from you, you know, where did this idea come from to start a training company for infrastructure? And how did you take that idea and build it into a business, into something that you delivered in such a short space of time?
Well, it's a really interesting question. So the reason I built Skillsy is because when I was at Roads Australia, like I said, I started in the organization and I knew nothing about transport. And so I spent my first 2 or 3 months just sounding like an absolute idiot. And you're not an idiot, right? You just don't know how the industry works yet. And so I always reflect back on one of my first meetings, because I had to meet, you know, with CEOs and EGMs and ministers, you know, from transport agencies. And I went into a meeting with a partner at a big four accounting firm. And I went up on the big lift and it was really scary. And I looked around, you know, I was probably in my, you know, late 20s. And I thought, I don't know what I'm doing. Am I in the right place? And I went into this meeting and this guy looked like he would have rather been anywhere else. He really did not want to be meeting with me. He was horrified that I even had really like the guts to even be meeting with him. That was basically the vibe. And I thought to myself, this is so unfair that someone who's new to this industry would feel like this, would not be welcome to this industry. And I don't ever want anyone else who's new to this industry to feel this way. So when I was at Roads Australia, I saw this massive wave of work coming. And I thought there's going to be thousands of people entering this industry from overseas, from other industries, and each of them are going to be absolutely clueless about how the infrastructure sector actually works. So I thought, wouldn't it be better if we spent a couple of days doing an induction with young professionals or people from overseas to teach them how our industry works and that it's taught by the leaders of this industry? So they're learning from the absolute best. And so I went around to about 50 leaders of all the big government departments and all the big construction companies. And I said, if we were to build something like this, would you send people? And they said, we'll send them yesterday. There was so much support for this concept. And so little by little, we got everyone. We had Infrastructure Australia involved. We had most of the transport departments. We had all the tier one contractors. And then they started sending their people to attend it. And something that really mattered to me was the collaboration aspect as well, that we bring together people from all aspects of the sector to really begin collaboration as soon as they start their career. That was really important to me. So I never think of things as businesses, frankly. I think of them as really good ideas that need to happen. And then how do you build them? And then when you do that, the money comes. It's you build the concept and then the money is there.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that story. It's pretty powerful, right? Actually. And I love the kind of purpose-driven approach that you had. I also really liked hearing that moment for you where you found yourself in that room and you found yourself, I guess, you know, from what I heard, being in a position where you're not necessarily feeling welcomed because you're not already an infrastructure person or a transport person. And it actually just makes me think, Lauren, right? In those moments that we have where you've gone into a new job and you don't know what you're doing, or you find yourself in a room and everyone else is an expert and you're not, like, have you got any advice around that? Like for our listeners, just, you know, how do you approach those situations where you feel a little bit like you're out of your depth?
The trick to me has always been to stay curious and don't be apologetic for asking questions. The more questions you ask of anyone that you can ask, the faster you'll learn. And I found that people are really keen to share. The majority of people are really keen to share. And I think we're also really aware in this industry now, you know, we have a massive skills shortage that we need everyone we can get. So, and frankly, we're not doing everything the best that we can, and we can learn a lot from other industries. So I think people are really open to having those conversations. One thing that I've probably done that might be different to other people is people always say to me, do you have a mentor? And I say, do I have a mentor? I have about 100 mentors. You know, there's about 100 people in my life that I can call for different things. And that doesn't come from privilege. You know, I arrived in this country. I didn't know anybody. I just slowly made friends. I was generous with my time. I was generous with my heart and effort. And and then you build those relationships and you're able to have a coffee, make a phone call. And so I guess I would encourage new people to identify a few people in their kind of sphere of influence who they can have a coffee with, who they can make a phone call to, and don't be afraid to reach out, or be afraid and do it anyway, because people are so generous with their time and they want to support you to grow.
I really, really love that. And this concept of staying curious, wow, that I think is so important to keep to the front of mind. Kind of leads a little bit to my next question, right? Because I want to talk about the fact that in reality, transport is still a male-dominated industry. Like the stats are very clear on that, yeah? 4% of all CEOs in transport are female. In infrastructure, actually, I understand that the rate of female participation across all seniority levels is even lower than what we see in transport. And Lauren, I know, right, from the experience that you've had, that you've absolutely been in a room where you're the only woman at the table. You've absolutely been in situations where you might be the most junior person in the room and female and all of those things, right? And it's not just around gender, yeah? I think all of us can find ourselves in a situation where we are different to the others. And I want to ask you, do you have any advice for women who find themselves being, I guess, outnumbered in the room?
It's so interesting about the advice that I might have, because when I started in the industry, it was very clear that there were very few women in the industry. Frankly, when I was at Roads Australia, there were no women on the board. And so in that situation, you really need male allies to be supporting you. And I'd also encourage people to have like a really good network of other females in their organization or other people of the same diversity group to stick together and discuss some of your challenges. But I think at the beginning of my career, I never thought, oh, I can't necessarily be CEO because I'm a woman. Or I just thought I'm going to take every cool opportunity that comes my way and just go for it. And little by little, I just naturally took on more senior roles. And a lot of that was because I had really strong male advocates who I'd formed really good relationships with. I always make the joke that I generally am reporting to men who are about, you know, 60 plus. And I have them as kind of my ambassadors or my allies. But when you're in an industry that's so male dominated, you do need male allies as well.
If you're enjoying Women Who Move Nations, make sure you follow us on your favorite podcast platforms and rate the show to help more people find us.
Follow the Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand to learn more about public transport and to keep up to date with all our events and activities.
Our website is ptaanz.org. We're also on LinkedIn. Just search Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand.
And our Twitter handle is PTAANZ_.
If you have any feedback or questions, please send us an email at info@ptaanz.org.
So I wanted to ask you something, right? And I know that we've spoken about this previously and, you know, I've kind of known you, right, before you've started in this role. I understand you've got some news to share with our listeners, and I'd love to hear more about that and have a bit of a chat around it.
Do you want me to announce it?
Yeah.
So I am pregnant.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I haven't really known the right way to kind of tell industry, not that I have a responsibility to, but I've wanted to. So this is the perfect opportunity to be telling people.
Yeah, I'm really, really happy for you, Lauren. And I know, you know, you've just started a new role and, you know, we've had some conversations about it and I love how honest you've been and open during this podcast. And, you know, if you're comfortable, I'd really like to ask you a question, right, around you've just started a new role and you're pregnant and what this experience has been like for you. And I guess just from a context perspective, right, I've got a number of friends and people in my life who I've heard from them that they feel that they can't go apply for a new job because they know that they want to get pregnant in the next 12 months or they've been trying to get pregnant or, you know, and so they feel like actually it's not an acceptable thing to do to go pitch yourself for a new role, right? And you started a role pregnant and I hate to say this, right, because it's like times are changing, but there's still a weird thing around it. What's been your experience?
Yeah, it's really interesting because as you're talking, I'm just thinking that there's always two sides, right? There's this side that really believes in yourself, and then there's this side that doubts whether you're doing the right thing and questions. And so I guess my situation was a little bit unusual in that I didn't actively apply for this job. I was contacted and asked if I was interested in applying for it. So I guess that helped my confidence when it came to applying for the role. But when I was approached for the role, I was in very early pregnancy, to the point that, you know, before you're supposed to tell people, very early. And because of my age and because I'm high risk, because I'll be honest, I did IVF, I wasn't telling anyone that I was pregnant yet. And so when I went for the role, I thought to myself, well, it was early in the process. And I thought, well, they want me and I don't know that this pregnancy is really going to work. So I'm just going to go for it. And then as my pregnancy went on and it looked like, you know, this is really happening, this is really a thing. And I'd wanted it for so long. I was terrified. And even when I was down to the final three or four, I thought to myself, should I withdraw from this? I don't come from transport world. And frankly, like you said, in government, there is a lot more support for parental leave. But I come from big build world. You don't talk, you're not a woman in senior leadership. You're not, you don't talk about these kind of things. You know, all the CEOs are male. I mean, it is slowly changing, but that's where I come from. And so I really considered withdrawing. I guess it brings me back to what I said earlier, where, you know, I have all of these kind of mentors and I rang a number of them, male and female. And I said, what do you think I should do? The majority, vast majority, a couple of them actually didn't, but the vast majority said, you have to go for it. You say all the time that you stand for these values. What kind of message are you sending to other women if you withdraw now? And frankly, they're right. You know, we have to have these people. And I realize that I stand on the shoulder of giants. You know, there were women before me who probably put their hand up and said, I'm pregnant, and probably were stood down. So I'm very conscious of that. But then there were other women who have taken roles while they've been pregnant, who have been offered roles while they're on parental leave. And, you know, and then you see like former Prime Minister of New Zealand who was able to have a baby while she was Prime Minister. And you just think, well, if she can do it, surely I can do it. And I was really nervous, frankly, when I had to tell the chair and the recruiter that I was pregnant. I was really, really nervous. And that's not because of their character. That's just because, you know, of the industry and our sector. And they both were like, that is awesome news. Like, they were so supportive of this. And I'm so grateful to them. And I say to them all the time, like, let's not forget that 10 years ago, this would not have been the response, and how we're so lucky that industry has changed. And I feel really glad that I'm sort of in this kind of forefront of this new age where maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay. And that you can be a leader and you can be a woman and you can have a baby and you can come back and you can take a long time or you can take a short time and, you know, you just work it out. So yeah, so that's how it started. And I'm really glad I made that decision, because really the response from industry has been incredible and the board has been super supportive.
Lauren, I've just like had goosebumps for the last like 2 minutes. How incredible. And I love that you've been so supported, and thank you so much for your honesty and vulnerability in sharing that, right? Because it's big. It's big. You know, I really recognize that. I just love how all of this has worked out for you. It's so good. Okay. So you're pregnant and you just started what we know is like a super busy role, right? Because I used to do it. So I'm wondering, like, what's your approach to work-life balance? There have been many women that I've interviewed in the course of this podcast who've kind of actually outright said work-life balance is a bit of a myth, or, you know, it's like, it's not necessarily like this thing to strive for, but I'm interested in your perspective on it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because what I say to people is build yourself a life that you don't want to escape from. And then, you know, obviously people are constrained in what they can do, but find something that you love so much that you're not spending your whole life trying to run away from it.
So good. I love that. I'm going to take that one.
Yeah, take it. It's interesting, because last night, obviously we have this delegation coming from the United States, and I had the idea that maybe we could bring along school kids to meet the delegation. And how cool would that be? You know, that one of their first experiences of infrastructure or transport is, you know, meeting the head of Los Angeles Metro or the head of Chicago Metro and, you know, seeing the Metro tunnel. And how cool would that be? And my partner was like, okay, just, you know, pursue it tomorrow morning. I said, no, I want to ring Melbourne Metro now and flag it with them, because it's like 6:30 p.m. And I was like, I know, but I'm excited. I just think it'll be so fun. Like, wouldn't it be fun to do? And I guess when you're driven by sort of passion and enjoyment, you're not trying to escape. But that being said, you do need times where you're off your phone and you're with your family. And I'm really lucky. I have a great partner and stepdaughter. And, you know, there's times where they're like, Lauren, enough, get off your phone and hang out with us. And I frolic with them and I go on adventures and, I go on holiday. So there are times where I do switch off, but in general, my day is really just a mix of passion and fun.
So good. So good. I just love this. Oh my God, you are the best. You're so inspiring. Okay. So I want to ask you, God, there's so many things actually I could ask you, Lauren. Let's be real. I want to ask you, right, around your confidence. I mean, something that I just feel like came across so clearly to me the first time I met you, I was like, wow, who is this woman? Absolute just like superstar. And you always just seem so confident to me, right? And I wanted to ask you, you know, have you had those moments of imposter syndrome, you know, where the voice niggly in the back of your mind being like, don't deserve to be here? Yeah, right. I know we all get it still. Damn it.
No, but I think it's really important to call it out. And I know people are saying, oh, we live in a post-imposter syndrome world or whatever. But I think it's so important to know that people at the top, and I that was one of my first messages that I posted on LinkedIn, is that everyone has these doubts when they take on a new role, no matter how, even whether you admit it or not. So I'm just going to do a really vulnerable share with you. So when I launched Skillzy, I really believed in the concept. You know, in my heart, in my gut, I knew that this would work. But there were a couple of people, a couple of very strong, influential people who basically said, who are you? You shouldn't be doing this. You're not even an engineer. And I spent a good 2 days, frankly, in bed going, maybe I made the wrong decision here. Maybe this is not right. Maybe I should back down. Maybe. And then it took like kind of two dark nights of the soul. And then I got up and I said, I have to do it. And you have to do it because you believe in it. You have to do it because of the 80% of people who will back you up. And there's going to be 20% who are skeptical. And frankly, any idea that's now accepted was once thought to be completely ridiculous. You know, think of any innovation. There are people at the beginning of that innovation who thought that won't work, that's not going to happen. And frankly, we need some of those people because they make us more resilient. They make us think through the topic and think, okay, how can I position it differently? And ultimately you have to go with your gut and go with what you think is right. And so I guess what I would say is that confidence is not lacking that fear. It's sort of having that fear and just going, I have to do it anyway. And knowing that there's going to be moments where you genuinely don't believe it's going to work.
Oh, this is just so good, right? Because recently I was reading something about confidence being a skill that you can exercise and develop as opposed to just a state of being. And the definition was pretty much exactly what you said, right? Which was you feel the fear and you do it anyway, and you exercise what you're doing.
What I will say though, is that, I mean, I'm American, right? We're sort of born with this like weird confidence. But when I was a child, when I was about 4 or 5 years old, they made me the head of Earth Day for New York. And I, you know, they had to choose someone in primary school and they chose someone who was like 4 or 5 years old. But, and that was always my parents saying, just go do it. You're going to be great. And not pushing me, but more like if I wanted to do something, just being behind me and going, you're going to be great. It's going to be great. So I think anyone with children on this podcast, just if your child shows any sort of aptitude for something or excitement about something, just encourage them. Even if, you know, my friend said the other day that his daughter is too tall to be a gymnast. And I said, that's ridiculous. Who says? Says who? You know, just support people pursuing, support your children having their dreams. And well, then the children will become me, for better or worse.
Oh my God, that's a laugh. I love that. You know, on the topic of children, right? So I've kind of known and I follow you online and stuff. So I know that you have written like at least one children's book. I don't know, maybe you've done more, which I just find like so amazing and also kind of random, right? Like, but I see that you just have a million things on the go at once. And I wanted to ask you about this, like being a children's book author, and how did that come about? And like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's really random. Well, I guess the first thing I would say is that anything that I think sounds fun to do, I've wanted to do in my life, right? I don't want to die and have any regrets. But the way I started doing the publishing is when I took that year off, after I left Rhodes Australia, I went traveling and I started just writing children's books. I had a bunch of godchildren at the time, and I thought there's some messages that I want to send to them. And I didn't expect them to turn into books, but I sent them to my godchildren. There were about 3 or 4 stories and they really loved them, and they were waiting for like the next version, and their parents would read them to them and they would cry or, you know, laugh or whatever the story was. And they said, these are actually really good. And I said, really? They're good. So when I went to New York, I met with some of the big publishers and they said, you know, we like your story, but, you know, it might take a few years to get published and you won't have any input on the illustrator. And, you know, you get 5% of the cut and all this kind of crazy stuff. And I thought, I just want to do it myself. So I started my own publishing company. We released our first book, This Small King, which was incredible. And it was kind of this metaphor for leadership. And yeah, so This Small King did really well. And then we developed a few more stories, but I've decided to pause the publishing while I take on this new role, because you can do it all, just not all at once. So I'm really proud of what we've done with the publishing, and particularly with This Small King. But I'm going to take a little break.
Yeah, I can only imagine. But how cool is that? I really love that you did that. You took the time out. You've done something creative. I really like as well that you published it yourself, right? So I just want to ask you a couple more questions. And the first one I wanted to ask you, right, is, are you a planner? Like, did you start this role being like, I've got a 100-day plan? And do you have like a 5 or 10 year career plan?
That's a really good question. So normally when I start a role, I go into it with the concept of the kind of leader I want to be or the type of vision that I have. And then I just let that guide me and help me make all my decisions. But I was very conscious that because I was pregnant, I only had a very limited time to be in the role before I had to go and hand over to an acting CEO. So I was super conscious of that. So I wanted to be really intentional with what I did. So I actually did do a 100-day plan. And the really incredible thing is, I make the joke to my partner all the time that I live about 100 days in a normal person's one day. So I've had like 3 weeks in the role and I've done like a lot of the things already. And I'm like, oh no, I've like run out of 100-day plan things. But yeah, no, I did. But in terms of my career, like definitely not. I don't have a plan. I think you can't now with kind of industry, how it is, everything's changing and evolving. So quickly, what I do in my career is I just take the next opportunity that sounds like a lot of fun and sounds like, you know, it's slightly out of my growth area so that I can grow and evolve. And no, I've never been someone who's like, next I'll be chief of staff. And no, definitely not.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing. I mean, it is hard right now, isn't it? I mean, I might be replaced by like an AI bot, right, in 5 years. I kid you not, my whole life.
Which is okay. It means we can go to the beach.
Totally. Running my whole life through ChatGPT at the moment. So, you know. Okay, I have my last question. It's the question that I always end the podcast on. And it's, what is your top piece of advice for younger women or people who are starting out that are new in the industry?
That's such a good question. I think my number one piece of advice is meet everyone you can, because you never know who will change your life. There's conversations I've had in the most random places all over the world that have led to opportunities and that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't had a chat to the person on the bus next to me or, you know, pulled aside someone from work for a coffee. I think you never know when inspiration or opportunity will hit. And so if your gut is saying to talk to someone, go do it.
I love that. You've absolutely inspired me during this conversation. Like, I cannot tell you, Lauren. Oh my goodness. I think you've just changed my life.
Oh, don't do everything too quickly. That's my other piece of advice. I haven't learned that one yet, but
yeah, I can't do that either. I go at 100 miles an hour. Lauren, thank you so much for being so open, sharing the vulnerable moments. It's been incredible to hear about your career story, your role at PTA ANZ. And I just want to say thank you so much. I've loved this and it's been a super honor to interview you.
Thanks so much, Michelle. It was so fun. It was as fun as I expected, which is good.
So good. So thanks so much, Lauren. And thanks to everyone for listening. This is the Women Who Move Nations podcast. And I'm your host, Michelle Batsis. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. This series is produced by Dylan Adler and Sophia Dickinson for the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand. To find out more, please visit our website, ptaanz.org. Tune in for more soon.